evening, everyone. It's Wednesday, July 15th. I'm Marianne Petrillo, CEO of West Business Development Center, and you are listening tonight to the New Normal Radio Hour. This is the fifth episode in a six-part series on how the pandemic has impacted our economy and the many ways it has forced us all to reassess, rethink, and reimagine our future. It's been another complicated week since we last connected via this radio program. New directives for the state and the county have come out, closing indoor activities once again for restaurants, bars, wineries, etc., and other sectors. The national economy is starting to feel like that old children's game of red light, green light, one, two, three. We open, we close, we open, we close. And for local business owners, this is a time that is very trying to their patience and their resolve to hold on to the businesses that they created and the businesses that we as consumers have grown to love and frequent in our community. In the new normal, where we now live, we are in a continual search for new ideas and to revisit old ideas with a new sense of urgency. So that's why I'm so excited tonight to have my guests here to talk about new business models such as cooperatives and how they are enhancing or have the potential to enhance our regional economy. Tonight we have Dr. Keith Taylor, Specialist in Community Economic Development at UC Davis, and District 3 Supervisor John Haschak to talk about these exciting new programs. Welcome, gentlemen, to the New Normal Radio Hour. Thank you for being here.
Hey, thank you, Marianne. It's a pleasure to be here and on the radio with you tonight.
Great, great. Well, I'm enjoying, looking forward to this conversation. So let's start, Dr. Taylor, with you. You know, I understand that much of your professional work has focused on community wealth building and entrepreneurship, I believe. You know, can you talk a little bit about, you know, how you came to this work and then ultimately the roads that lead you to Mendocino? Because we know all roads lead to Mendocino at some point.
Well, you know, I'm a California transplant, so I'm a Midwesterner by birth. I'm from Central Illinois. I thought I was going to stay in Central Illinois and help out with doing community economic development. You know, growing up in Mattoon, Illinois, we're the home of the bagel. So that's one of the stories I like to tell. You know, my friends in New York City don't really like hearing that, but what it is in the 80s, I was born and raised almost on economic development because I think it was 86. They had this whole thing where we're bringing in a bagel factory. So they're getting all these tax incentives and to attract them and create 500 jobs. We created the Bagel Fest. And to this day, Bagel Fest is still going in Central Illinois. It brings in country music acts and all this sort of thing. That factory today employs 50 to 100 people. And we still revere the bagel for all the things that it does in our community. So this is really how we do economic development in many of these hard-hit areas. We attract a firm, we give them all these incentives, and there's no guarantees that they're really going to return back to what we have given to them. So I set myself up on a journey starting in the early 2000s. I got involved in partisan politics. I was involved in the Democratic Party in Illinois. If you know anything about Illinois politics, it's not so kosher, shall we say. So I became disenfranchised. Wasn't a big fan of traditional business development approaches, bringing in the big factories and that sort of thing. So when I started my PhD work at University of Illinois, I got exposed to this food cooperative in the basement of a church called Common Ground. And there I met one of my good friends, Jacqueline Hanna. She just had come on the year before as a general manager. And she took this, you know, kind of small food cooperative that was doing $400,000 a year to its first expansion and its second expansion. So by the time that I left, I'd helped to do the member loan campaigns and all this kind of thing. And that food cooperative went from $400,000 a year to $8 million a year in the span of under 8 years. It's one of the fastest growing food co-ops in the United States. And a credit to her and her work. I was just kind of a supporting thinker and that sort of thing. Along the way, I got exposed to all of these ways that cooperatives can really enhance the economic development of local communities. you know, whether it's purchasing cooperatives helping small businesses, whether it's agriculture cooperatives helping small growers scale and compete at the national level. So then you go back to 2017, I'm on the academic job market, and I got job offers on the coast. I was getting pulled out of the Midwest, whether I wanted it or not. And I ended up at UC Davis. I never thought I'd be a California guy. And it's been a wonderful fit, though, because there are many communities out here. First of all, I get to see the great state of California. But I get to see these places that have the same narrative as the Midwest and rural and mid-sized communities. And they're all searching for what can we do that's different. And so far, I haven't seen comprehensive approaches that fold cooperatives into the economic development toolbox. So when I got here, I was kind of doing a little bit of a hustle to get exposed to all these communities. I was going out and speaking and making people aware of my research and development. And that's where I met Supervisor Haschak, is coming to Willits, doing the Economic Development Summit.
That is great. Yes, and I was at that Economic Development Summit and remember hearing you speak there. So thank you for that. I forgot about that. So Supervisor Haschak, I would like to know, and I have to tell you that I'm one of the 100 people that probably sit and do listen to the Board of Supervisors meeting on Tuesday. I look for, it's nice to have it actually on video because I could do it in the background and be listening and emailing at the same time. But I don't know how you do it. There's an array of problems. There's an array of challenges across the county, across the state, et cetera. And, it's sometimes too many things to solve, certainly in one supervisor meeting. But what I'd like to know is, you're meeting Keith again for the first time. What was the catalyst for that? And like, did you think once you heard what Keith had to say that this could be some approach that we bring into the county? What triggered it for you from an economic standpoint?
Well, let me take your question and go back a little bit in my history, and that I was in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, and part of my job there was cooperative development and working with communities and really trying to strengthen them, and so doing communal purchasing projects and projects that would benefit economic development of the community as a whole for people who didn't have much and didn't have much access to real structure and were coming out of a time of it was a war-torn country. And so there is lots of hesitation on that. Anyway, it gave me a kind of a real grasp of what the potential is for this kind of work and also, kind of the barriers that people in extreme situations would go through, but that would also come together to make something work for themselves out of necessity. And so I've had that community development kind of outlook on things. Obviously, I went into teaching and was in the teaching profession for 30 years before becoming a supervisor. And I was working with a union. I was a union president for about 20 years and working at all levels of the state in the California Teachers Association in that realm, too. So I just believe when people come together, you can do a lot of really good things. And that's where strength of community and possibility come together. So I met Dr. Taylor at that Economic Development Summit, and what he was saying resonated with my approach. And I think I'd just become a supervisor at that point, and I realized that we had a lot of issues in our county that maybe had the potential to really be worked on with this kind of approach, and especially, the cannabis industry and just the new legalization and people coming together, small farmers who had been kind of in separate, kind of lone wolf kind of new situations and just doing their own thing. And then all of a sudden they're in this competing against the RJ Reynolds and the, you know, the big new market that's emerging through in the cannabis industry. And it's like, how do we help people economically and get a structure so that they can come together and work? And so that's when I started connecting with Dr. Taylor and saying, hey, what kind of ideas do you have for this? And then he's kind of taken that and said, oh, well, we can do it for cannabis, but we can also do it for, you know, small businesses or agri-foods and maybe even the hospitality industry, you know, so there's lots of different possibilities coming out of this. And that's, we've been trying to get people together who are real positive thinkers and can work through some of the issues and look at what the possibilities are.
Yeah, I'm gonna come back to the actual program that you both are working on, but I love the fact of learning that you in your early part were came out of the Peace Corps and did that, and I find it always so fascinating, isn't it, that sometimes we build our careers, but we end up going back full circle to some of those early stages of community, like in your case, community development, and you're doing it again in this regard. So it's just part of our nature to really those early years of career building. We have a passion around. So thank you for doing that. That's great. And that's great that you're bringing that knowledge and expertise to our county. You know, before I get too far into the actual program, which I do want you to talk about and go into more detail. I do know that there are people listening tonight who probably have some vague sense of what a co-op is, you know, maybe just because they shopped at the Ukiah co-op and they like, oh, is it a food store? You know, so I'm wondering, Dr. Taylor, if you could kind of give a description of what a cooperative is and maybe some of the impacts that it has. I would love you to share that with the audience.
You know, if you don't mind, Mary, just briefly, if I may have John, do you mind answering that up real quick? Like your experience in Guatemala with what your exposure was to a co-op and how you saw it. And then I'll come in and I'll define it after John talks about that, if you don't mind, John.
Well, what we were doing in Guatemala was getting people together to do communal purchases and so that they could buy in bulk and get a lower price. And, and then, you know, make those decisions based on what they needed as a community. In my region, they were growing a lot of flowers and so it was buying the supplies they needed for that and also finding markets for them. So that was good work, and it was giving people a sense of control over their lives too.
Yep. That's a great way to look at it, John. There's so many ways that you can really look at cooperatives, and they're very flexible institutions. So the way that I would say is they're user-owned. So you pick a stakeholder group and you say they're the ones that are going to own it. So there's no reason why the workers of a firm couldn't own it, the consumers of a firm couldn't own it. So when you look at the Ukiah Food Cooperative, it's the consumers that own that particular storefront. What they do is they come together in order to own it and control it. So unlike an investor-owned firm, it's not he who has the most money has the most voice. It's one member, one vote. So you elevate people over money. That said, sometimes people will confuse that and say, these co-ops, they can't be sophisticated. They can't compete. They can't raise capital. Well, I'm in California, and I'm shocked to see how many people are members of REI. You know, REI is a major cooperative. I'm a member of two credit unions myself. I think probably a lot of people in the listenership are members of credit unions. The other thing is, even when these cooperatives achieve a large scale, they're very much more community and member attuned. So there's a great story of, I always mess it up, but it's Point Reyes, right? The little fishing community there.
Point Reyes.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So one of the things I was told about is that I think it was a Bank of America branch went under. They couldn't support it and they needed to have banking there. So they reached out to Redwoods Credit Union, and Redwoods Credit Union essentially said, well, to justify the business side of it, we need to have X number of folks in the community who are willing to bank with us. And people organized, and they actually got people committed. And sure enough, Redwoods Credit Union came through, and they opened up a branch there. So the credit union is there watching out for the service for people. You know, they just needed to go ahead and make the business pencil out. It wasn't about making a profit. It was about being able to deliver the service in a justifiable economic way. So it helps with providing a social glue. One last thing I'd mention this, Marianne, you noted with John and his work. I like working with John a lot. But one of the things that we see in this challenging government environment is we tend to expect a lot out of our policymakers. And so John gets in there and it's like, now, John, save us.
Right.
Yeah. But John's one person with a bunch of institutional support. What we can do, though, is working with someone like John and the county board of supervisors is get support to start more co-ops. And what that does is it brings more people to the plate. So instead of relying on just singular people, we actually create new institutions that create more civic capacity. Mm-hmm. To develop more economies, more politics, all these great things.
It does also bring about a more social cohesion and really getting people together to take ownership of their own responsibility towards building wealth or creation, not only for themselves, but also very much for the community. So, and what the supervisors and government entities, whether it's our supervisors or whoever, it's that public-private partnership that begins to evolve. John, I think the work that you and the supervisors and any city council members too are in the same situation are dealing with a myriad of issues, but if you had more support, maybe in some of these things that, you know, Dr. Taylor is talking about, that would probably help you get clearer direction on what to be supportive of. Would that be the case?
Right, exactly. And the last thing I want is this to be about me. I'm trying to find people right now who share a similar vision and who can kind of help make this happen. Or whatever happens, you know, but come together because
we
need this community development and, you know, economic development in our communities on lots of different levels. And so bringing people together is good work.
Talk a little bit about this initiative now and, you know, give us some kind of understanding. I know you have a number of people who are already part of it and have been meeting, but maybe just tell us a little bit of background about what it's about and what you're trying to achieve.
Well, I think we started meeting about, in the fall. Mm-hmm. We had our first meeting, and we've had three or four meetings since, and it's really a group of people from Trinity County, Humboldt, Mendocino, Lake, Sonoma, even Marin County, and people who are working in cannabis, in agri-foods, in community development, in economic development. We have some supervisors who've been attending. So there's a wide range of people, wide range of interest. And it's really, we're going to start trying to discern what the interests are and form interest groups. And one could be on the cannabis, one could be on agri-foods, one could be on tourism or whatever we can get. We have a significant bunch of people working on an issue where we can make some progress. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're hoping for is that Dr. Taylor has the approach, or he's got the expertise on how to create this vision that we come up with. It's not my vision. It's what we come up with as a group. And so we've been meeting once every couple months, but we're hoping to pick that up because we got certainly delayed by COVID but at the same time, it's one of those, if there's a crisis, there's also an opportunity. And this might be the nexus for that.
That's right. And Dr. Taylor, I'm sure one of the hardest things is that first step to create that common vision. I would imagine that's, you know, sometimes rolling up your sleeves and getting everybody all on the same page is hard. How do you approach that? How do you get people started in that?
Yeah. What I love about Mendocino County is there's a lot of wonderful personalities. And and I mean that in the best way. People really do want to do great things there. Everybody seems to have a vision for the county. And, you know, there's definitely a contingent of folks that might say, I like it the way it is. But there's two realities that I see that's facing Mendocino County. And that is, one, you remain stale and allow someone else to set the net above you and to capture all these resources that are going to come in and reshape the community. The second approach is to recognize that that's just what's going to happen. You know, we're seeing Silicon Valley folks are starting to spill over into the region. How do we control for that to make it where it has that Mendocino look to it and the Mendocino control? So people are going to come in. They're going to attempt to change. They're going to attempt to, you know, adjust it. And what we got to do is create a series of almost like interest groups. So whenever I talk about this approach to community wealth building and using co-ops in this toolbox, I'm not trying to tell everybody that there's one size that fits all. I want everyone to break out into their little area of interest and focus on that. And what you're going to get is people are going to be more incentivized. They're going to care more about that specific slice. So one of the things that Supervisor Haschak and I have been working on is kind of ironing the kinks out with the facilitation. Because at first we were trying to do ag and food, and underneath that would be the cannabis folks. But it's become clear to us that the cannabis folks are such a defined area that that almost needs to split off and be a focal point. And then work on what does the ag and food look parallel to that at the same time. While we're doing that, there's no reason why other folks couldn't pop up that might be interested in other things. I know Fort Bragg, one of the things I'd heard early on when I moved out here is housing is an issue. Well, great. Let's get a housing group together and form maybe a land trust or something like that. Also, you know, I'm very impressed with the Ukiah Food Cooperative as well as it's the Harvest Markets. I think those are lovely institutions. How can they work together to create retail outlets for the local produce that's coming through? And as we scaffold that out, connect it to other value chains in other communities, such as Willits, going to Santa Rosa then from there. So it's to say, we're trying to start small and focused with the cannabis folks on one side and then broader ag and food. And then as we advance, we're hoping to have a number of spinoff groups. So that's how I would frame it.
So I'm going to come back to that because I want to talk about this patchwork that you're referencing. But let me just give the call-in number to folks. If you are just tuning in, I'm Marianne Petrillo, CEO of West Business Development Center, and you're listening to the New Normal Radio Hour. Our topic tonight is a discussion on community wealth building and the adoption of new business models, in particular cooperatives. My guest tonight is Dr. Keith Taylor, specialist in community economic development at UC Davis, and Mendocino County District 3 Supervisor John Haschak. Now is the time if you are interested in calling in to ask a question of one of these gentlemen. Please do so. The number you can call in at is 707-895-2448. That's 707-895-2448. So I want to come back. You know, both of you just described the first visual I got in my mind as you were describing it was a patchwork quilt. You know, it's like you've got a lot of these different patches, and you know, now it's up to us to see how do we put these things together so that it helps the overall economy. And I think you cited a number of our local businesses who are involved in that, but I'd love to hear a little bit about some of the other regions or cooperatives that you mentioned. I think we do have a call, though, so hold that thought, and I'll come back to getting examples. Go ahead, caller. Hello? Hello? Nope. I think they left. Okay. So let's go back. They may call back again. Feel free to. But Dr. Taylor, some examples for us of successful outcomes?
So I'll give something that's really tangible for Mendocino right now. There's a lot of challenges facing the small business community with COVID and sheltering in place. And people are wondering, how are these vital local businesses going to sustain themselves? And there's a number of ways we can do that. For one of the projects I'm wanting to do is to connect independent businesses to purchasing cooperatives. And this way, these small businesses can actually compete against the Amazons and Walmarts of the world. There are tons of examples of purchasing co-ops in our own backyard. Do It Best Hardware in Willits. That is part of a purchasing cooperative, locally owned. Another is, let's say there's a small business that looks like it's going to die off. There's groups out there like Project Equity that help to convert those businesses over to employee ownership. So there's that opportunity we have as well. There's a lovely story in Maine of the Island Employee Cooperative, small rural area. It was a ma-and-pa owned grocery store, gas station, and hardware store. They were in their 70s and needed to get out. So the community banded together and they helped the employees purchase those three businesses. And now, like I said, it's called the Island Employee Cooperative. It's maintained this important local community institution. And I think somewhere like Fort Bragg and Mendocino could really benefit from that approach.
You bring up something that West has been looking at creating, either a training program or a webinar or something around succession planning. And this is something, you know, that I think we are seeing more and more in our rural communities, which is, you know, the 75-year-old mom and pop who have been working the land, the farm, something. They're doing an excellent job. They've built it. They probably have spent 30 years of their life investing in something that they have built and produced and grown. Their children have been raised. They're maybe not going to participate, but they don't want to give this up because this not only has moved beyond being just a form of financial stability. It is an institution, and frankly, it's an institution I think we have seen that is important to consumers in Mendocino. We love, you know, the wineries, the cheeses, the artisanal, you know, foods that have been developed really over decades from these families. Now, what do they do? Because now, do they just put it on the block and sell it to somebody else? That doesn't feel right. I think it's interesting what you're talking about here, because that is a form of succession planning, is to start thinking now, maybe employee owned or building a cooperative could be an answer. And I don't know, Supervisor Hestrick, if you've seen a lot of these, but there are a lot of businesses that, you know, the owners now are, you know, have been doing it a long time. So.
Well, I think that's one of the beauties of Mendocino County, is that we do have a lot of small, locally owned businesses. And that really is our strength. And so how do we support these people the best we can? I know that the West Company is doing incredible work, especially in this time of COVID, that you know, there's a lot of collaboration going on between the businesses, trying to figure out the best way to move forward, submitting plans, to deal with the attestation and all that, mm-hmm. that we're working on, and staying open as much as possible in this time of the pandemic. But we also, you know, so the strength is these small local businesses. And, you know, what I've seen lately is West Company doing a lot of good work. I've just had a meeting this morning with the Chamber of Commerce from Willits and Ukiah, and they're working very closely these days with Fort Bragg and Point Arena. And so I see our businesses working together, and that is a good thing. And so how do we support that as much as we can? And I think that Dr. Taylor might have some ideas that we, you know, in our dealing with our microeconomic models, might not be able to look at. And Dr. Taylor would have some those big macro issues and help us kind of see what a bigger picture could look like when we all come together. And especially if we're taking people from Humboldt, Trinity, all the way down to Marin, you know, that would be our strength. The North Coast, the most beautiful place in the world. And if we can use that for some kind of mutual benefit, that would be just, that's my vision.
And it's a great one, and it's absolutely right. We, you know, our strength is in our small businesses. And like I said, this is a challenging time for them. But I also believe, and Dr. Taylor, I'm sure you agree with this, entrepreneurs are the most resilient people, you know, in the universe, because they are entrepreneurs. They chose that field. They chose that life. And so I'd love to hear a little bit more from you about, you know, how those people maybe could get involved in your program and what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, first what I'd say is, before I hop into that, just say briefly, there is an educational component to what I'm doing, and it's trying to bring people up to speed on the state of the art on cooperatives. What's the world of the possible that folks can use cooperatives for? And I do want to clarify to the audience that I don't think cooperatives are necessarily 100% the answer to everything. But right now, they're in the public policy toolbox. They're about 1-5%. I think they could be more like 30%. And that would be a force multiplier to how we do this rural economic development. So Supervisor Haschak had mentioned earlier that there's this example with Italy. And in Italy, the apple crops are actually from smallholder growers. And they're able to scale up through their system to, I think that, I always give a conservative count. I've heard it's 50% of the European apple market comes from these small growers in Italy, but my Italian colleagues are insistent that it's more like 70%. They just control the apple economy in Europe. There's no reason why we couldn't think about how we could structure this in the North Coast region.
That's right. I think we have a caller. Okay. Hello, caller. Hello.
Yes. Hello? Hello?
Yes, we can hear you. Do you have a question?
No, I wanted to make a comment. I have been following Supervisor Haschak's communiques all over the place. I just wanted to comment that way back in 68, I started a local small business, and one of my wholesalers put me on to a purchasing company clear back in New York. It was a firearms business, and I was able to pool my resources and orders with a lot of other small ones, and I competed even with the big, huge national firearms and sporting goods company. I understand exactly what he's talking about.
That's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. That was really awesome.
I appreciate what he and Dr. Taylor and West Company are doing.
Great. Well, thank you. You're proving our point.
I'd like to add to that is that this is a unique time in Mendocino County, too. We've talked about the cannabis legalization, small farmers, and our heritage and all that. We have this equity grant that Mendocino County received from the state of California for $2.2 million. And when we wrote the application for that equity grant, we wrote in that part of it would be used for cooperative development, economic development for, you know, the people who were suffered through the war on drugs. And so that's part of this $2.2 million, is to use this money effectively to help this economic development vision. And I think that that could really be a boon for creating the structure for what might help people, you know, make it through this new legalized market.
Yeah, definitely different approaches is what we need to be looking at across the board. And we did have an episode on the New Normal Radio Hour on cannabis and spoke about some of the challenges that the cannabis community faces as it relates to different business structures, and education was a high on that list. Are you finding in the work that you have begun here, whether it's Dr. Taylor or Supervisor Chastek, are you finding that the learning curve is steep for a lot of folks to understand, or are they, you know, are people kind of getting it and willing to look at some of this different kind of different approach to a business model?
John, what would you say?
I would say that, you know, I am learning a lot because I'm trying to figure out what people really need. And so it's really more listening at this point. And I'm hoping that Dr. Taylor is the one who can help listen. And then, you know, we can discern what the interests are. And from that, we can come up with the relevant structures that might work. Is that, Dr. Taylor, is that what you're imagining too? Or
yeah, it's friend, put words in your mouth? I just say, there's a lot of folks that are very smart, have a lot of great ideas, really want to change things in a very positive direction, and it is about sorting and prioritizing. Mm-hmm. And the challenge up to this point, I think, is not the people at all. It's really, how do we do this? Well, we're all sheltered in place and using Zoom for our facilitations. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we did our facilitation last month. And one of the things I asked the group afterward is, should we do this a little bit longer? And everyone was like, actually, we do it about half the amount of time.
So right.
It's things like that. There's a learning curve because of our current situation. And mm-hmm. But otherwise, you know, if had it not been for the pandemic, I think that we'd be able to really be firing all cylinders right now. Just mildly delayed is what I would say.
I think we have a call, another call come in. Go ahead, caller. You're on the New Normal Radio Hour.
Hi, thanks for the show. So say you were a local business owner of a small scale farm. You're just at the point where you either need to get an investment or maybe have a partner. What would be the first steps you would take to start a cooperative? I could just see the benefits of a lot of people sort of pulling together in our community right now for, you know, creating a successful business, small scale farms kind of thing. I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for calling, Dr. Taylor.
Yeah. So the habit
first steps.
Yeah, the hat that I wear is, so my title is specialist. It's another term for extension professor. So unlike my colleagues who profess in the classroom, I go out to California communities, right? So there's this whole cohort of folks that are like me, your county advisors, and they're the folks that you reach out to help out with connecting with knowledge. So that would be someone like me, but also resources and assets. So in the world that I play in, farmers do have access to CoBank, Farm Credit Services, all these kinds of potential lenders that can help out small-scale farmers. But by connecting with these financiers and as well as experts such as myself, we can actually help to convene groups that have similar needs. And what we could do is figure out that Venn diagram is, that overlap of interest. And wherever that overlap is, that's an opportunity to develop a new cooperative. That helps you to drive extra cost savings, get extra value out of your crops, and this sort of thing. So the process would really be to reach out to folks like myself, get a convening going, and identifying what those opportunities are.
And Dr. Taylor, maybe at the end of this program, we could either give out your email to contact, or happy to have them contact me, and I could pass it along. So let's do that at the end of this program. I think we have another call coming
in. And the same with me, too. If people contact me, that would be great. And I can
say
we're looking for people who have this kind of energy for what we're the group that we're forming. So
excellent. Next caller. Hello, caller.
Hello.
You're on the news. Hi.
Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Can I go ahead and ask?
Yes, please. Please do. Thank you.
Thank you. I think we keep asking, when are we going to get a cannabis bank? Because it really would be awesome if farmers could have a place to put their money and lend to other farmers. And I just don't see, I just am having trouble understanding why this question keeps kind of like just being pushed off to the side, other than does the federal government have to insure a bank, or can we insure it ourselves? And how come this path, it really seems like the next thing we need is a bank. Is that something that's going to come to fruition, or is in the future, or being talked about, or where does that lie? And I'll take my answer off here. Thank you.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I love it. And I'm going to pass this on to Dr. Taylor. You know, he probably knows a lot more of the specifics than I do. But I know that the state of California has made some steps in that direction, and hopefully we can support that as much as possible. I think the county supervisor's legislative platform is supportive of public banking.
So this is one of the areas that I'm excited to bring to a place like Mendocino, is educating folks on the world of the possible in this. So when you look at cannabis banking, there's a lot of reasons, a lot of people to say, no, you can't do this. Here's why, yada, yada, yada. What I find to be interesting is look at the way that Airbnb went into all these communities that said they didn't want them there. Look at the way that Uber went into heavily regulated areas where there are, you know, cab companies. There's this writer named Douglas Rushkoff. He called this renegade capitalism. These companies would just kind of go in and say, we don't care, we're going to do it. Well, to that I say, why can't we do that when we know that the righteousness is on our side? This isn't really some sort of a radical idea to do a cannabis bank. We know cannabis is here to stay. We know that if we don't do anything about this, that the big hedge funds are going to come in and set up their own banking before the laws get into place. So it is incumbent upon us to do it ourselves before the market gets there. And one way that we can, well, two ways we can do it. One is the new public banking laws in California. So we could look at trying to start a public bank in the Mendocino or the region. Another approach is going back to the credit unions. Look at the credit unions that are there in Mendocino and look to see who's serving on the board of those credit unions and engage with them and say, why can't we create what's called a credit union service organization, which is a co-op of credit unions? And they can essentially do the banking off the books, but bring all their skills and knowledge of banking to this new institution. If they tell you it can't be done, that's not true. They can absolutely do it. And if they drag their heels, guess what? You can run for the board, and then you can get your credit union to do it after all.
So. Great. Okay, we have a next caller coming in. Thank you. Thank you for that. Good ideas. Caller? You're on the New Normal Radio Hour.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
Thank you for the show. Two things. One was you mentioned having a webinar or some sort of workshop for succession. Mm-hmm. And I saw today that the Round Man Smokehouse is going out of business. It seems like maybe, I don't know whether an employee, you know, what their situation is, but maybe the West Company could somehow put out the information that this is possible so that people who are looking to just sell their business might consider that as an option. And the other question I had was, how does the Mendo Lake Food Hub fit into what you're discussing? Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for that question. And first, let me say, it's always heartbreaking for all of us to hear when a company is closing or potentially closing. And, you know, I and West Company is just one of many people who are here to help. So please spread the word. If we can't help, somebody else will. And we're always looking for ways to help folks before they permanently close their doors and make sure that we explore every opportunity to change that around. So, we will be here for every small business in Mendocino County. That is a good question about the Mendo Lake Food Hub, and I was wondering how you see that fit into this discussion. I think they're fabulous you know, entity. I personally love their storyline.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing that we're doing in our communities for the small farmers, and hopefully we can replicate that and do it in other areas too. So, Dr. Taylor, I don't know if you're familiar with that, the food hub, and probably you're familiar with the idea.
The idea, yeah.
The concept of being able to have these storage areas all over the county so that the travel time between the time the food is produced and the time that is consumed mm-hmm. is shortened, but it's also getting, you know, a very holistic approach to farmers planting and sharing crops that are grow in certain areas as well. So you can't grow tomatoes on the coast, but you can grow them inland. But on the coast, you can grow lettuce, and inland you can't. And they've worked out a really remarkable system. And that was a pilot project by NCO, North Coast Opportunity, who do fabulous work, I think, that have really, at least from what I've seen, spearheaded a lot of wonderful pilot programs that then go on to become something bigger than what they started. So NCO has been doing that for a very long time, quite successfully.
You know, to respond to what the caller was saying and to talk about the food hub and that the infrastructure there, there's a number of interesting things that I think can be done in this. For one, maybe not all small businesses are good targets for converting over to worker cooperatives. Maybe it's ideal they remain as independents. But that said, one of the challenges with California is real estate. Maybe there's an opportunity as these businesses are facing hardships, we can convert the commercial real estate itself to a cooperative owned by the community. One of the examples I love is Yes Magazine featured an article about the Northeast Investment Cooperative in Minneapolis. And what it is a group of folks said, we want to maintain the character of our downtown. We don't want a Gap coming in and becoming a mall. So they started buying up the storefronts. And what they did is they said, we want to make a return on our investment, but we don't care to make money. We don't want to get rich off this. The main thing is we want thriving local businesses, and we want to help those new businesses start up. I think, you know, Fort Bragg, Willits, Mendocino, all these areas would be great places where such a commercial real estate cooperative can come out of. And, you know, as you get more and more into, you know, these kind of business approaches, you learn that they've already got a model. It's just in the investor community. They call them syndicates. Mm-hmm. This is just flipping it on. Instead of investors owning it, it's individuals in the community.
Right. We have another call. Hello, caller. Welcome to the New Normal Radio Hour.
Hi.
You have a question?
How you doing?
Hi. Good.
Yeah, I just wanted to clarify something. I'm one of the owners of Round Man Smokehouse, mm-hmm. and it was said that, you know, we're putting the business up for sale. And I just wanted to clarify that we're not closing the business. We've decided to sell the business before all the COVID things going on, and I just, you know, we're going to sell it and find buyers that, you know, will continue along the lines that we were that we do now. So I just wanted to clarify that it came across that we were going to close, and we're not closing.
Well, thank you for taking the time. I appreciate you taking the time. You know, we always hear things, people share, and it was, I'm sure, out of concern because we love your products and your service. And so thank you very much for clarifying that and for calling in.
You know, we want to continue with the same staff and keep the employees mm-hmm. there and everything. So
excellent.
I just wanted to pass that on. So
excellent. Well, thank you. Thank you for being part of our community and to staying with it. And we certainly wish you the best of success.
Well, thank you very much.
Challenging time.
Hey, and if I could jump in here with a...
Please do.
We had that question about the Mendo Lake Food Hub. Mm-hmm. And there's also, if I could make a plug right now, for the Local Food Security Forum, which is going to be on July 19th, that Sunday, at 4 p.m. via Zoom. And it's going to look at how we can achieve more local food security. And so there's going to be some guest speakers on there. It's going to be moderated by Michael Foley, who's the director of the School of Adaptive Agriculture, co-owner of the Green Uprising Farm, former Willits Farmers Market manager. And also we're going to have Rachel Britton, Carolyn Raddatz, Ruthie King, and Sarah Gruski, you know, all local farmers from the Willits area and really doing great work. And so food security is a big issue, and how can we keep it local?
How do they find out about this, Supervisor Hasecheck? Where could people go to either register for this event? Do you know?
Yeah, I've got the Zoom number here. It's sponsored by the WELL, which is a Willits Economic Localization Group.
Okay.
And so...
Okay. Maybe it's also on the School of Adaptive Agriculture. That's, I believe, Ruthie's group.
Yeah, and they could also email Madge Strong, which is mstrong@willitsonline.com.
Great.
You could send out the link to them.
Great.
Whoever wants it.
That's terrific. Thank you. That is always good to know about some of these activities coming up. So definitely we'll keep everyone apprised of that and send notices out. We're getting close to the kind of final moments of this conversation. The hour always goes by very quickly. It always amazes me. So I want to thank both of you for taking out this time. We still have the calls, you know, the call line open at 707-895-2448. But let me, ask each of you to kind of think about some closing statements, about, you know, the challenges that we're really facing. I mean, we are really at a very difficult point in our history and certainly for our county. And I would think that it is incumbent upon all of us to really be thinking now about what can we be doing to secure, you know, growth for our community over time. Are there any silver linings that you would say, you know, during this difficult time that comes from living in a rural region? And, you know, what are some of the hopeful things that you see ahead?
Well, I would just say that, you know, we're living through this pandemic right now. And what I've seen is a lot of people really seeking community in a new way. And we're certainly dealing with incredible barriers to that. And at the same time, what's it going to look like? And people are thinking about what are we going to be doing as economic drivers for the future, but also what are our communities going to look like? And so I think that some of what the work that we're doing is kind of trying to bring those together, you know, and I'm just very hopeful that we can come out of this pandemic stronger and in a better way of making our small independent, you know, whether they're farmers, whether they're retail people, whether they're, you know, dealing with the tourist industry, whatever, but that's the strength of our county. And let's make that as strong as possible. Let's make our communities connected as much as possible. And I think that we'll be better off in the long run when we do that.
Great. Absolutely. Collaboration, communication, all key. Dr. Taylor, thoughts?
Yeah, I'm incredibly optimistic about these things. I think that a region like the North Coast, Mendocino in particular, has enormous assets that could be used. And a lot of it comes from the collective action, whether it's through your local government, through agencies such as yours, Marianne, through just the groups that we're trying to pull together. I think the area that I'm from in the rural Midwest, a lot of folks have kind of asked, you know, what's going to happen to us, as if these things are going to be done to us, as if we don't have any power to push back on these things. And even then, when people do think there's power to push back, I always chuckled in Champaign-Urbana when I did my PhD. People would say, man, why can't Trader Joe's come here? Why do you guys want Trader Joe's? Like, you can, that's what you do a weekend trip to Chicago for. Like, you know, if it's here in your backyard, it's no fun anymore. But instead, start asking, what could we do to control for our own future? What do we want this to look like? And with that, we have a number of advantages. Instead of waiting for some, you know, big hedge fund to come into Mendocino and control the tourism and make it another Tahoe type region, let's get a hold of it ourselves. How can we make tourism where it generates local community wealth? How can we attract an amazing workforce to work at our hospital and our municipalities? What can we do to preserve our land for farming and agriculture? We have people that want to do this. It's just a matter of convening and doing it.
Right.
I go back to my favorite quote, Ostrom, and she said, "We can, so we must." And that's the line that I take with me.
That's fantastic. Thank you. Thank you both. You have been listening all to the New Normal Radio Hour, a series on KZYX about how our rural economy can survive the global pandemic. I'm your host, Marianne Petrillo, CEO of West Business Development Center. At West Center, we provide confidential counseling and relevant training programs for our entrepreneurs throughout Mendocino and Lake County. And you can access our work online at westcenter.org or call us at 707-964-7571. I'd like to thank tonight's guests, Dr. Keith Taylor, Specialist in Community Economic Development at UC Davis, and Mendocino County District 3 Supervisor John Haschek. As a matter of fact, Dr. Taylor, would you like to give out your phone number or your email for people to contact you, and then I'll ask John to do the same?
Sure. My email is keitaylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R, at ucdavis.edu. And if you do a search for me online, Keith Taylor, UC Davis, it'll come up pretty readily.
And Supervisor Haschek, email for you, for people to contact you?
Yeah, it's Haschek, J, H-A-S-C-H-A-K, J, at MendocinoCounty.org. And my phone number is 707-972-4214. And if you're interested in any of the things that we've talked about tonight, please give me a call.
Great.
Or email.
Tune in. Thank you both again. This is a fabulous conversation. Please tune in for our final and special episode program on July 29th at 7 p.m. We will have Gerbach Chahota, who is the CEO CalEd Executive Director, and she, along with a panel of guests, will be talking about regional rural economic development and what is going on not only in our county, but all the North County regions. I would again like to thank our guests for being here and for sharing their knowledge and expertise. And well, let's not forget that public health and economic development are interconnected. So please remember to social distance, wash your hands, and wear your masks, because that's important to all of us. The New Normal Radio Hour will air every Wednesday evening at 7 p.m. throughout the summer here on KZYX, alternating with the Renewable Energy Hour. You can find an archive of this show and all our programming online at jukebox.kzyx.org.